All glory, symbol, devotees. All glory, symbol, devotees. All glory, symbol, devotees. All glory, Shishiguro, Shigaranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Readings from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter 8, Text 43. Sri Shai Uvacha Dvam Nastapa Paramam Dvam Nastapa Paramam Atta Yad Atmatejo Yene damadi purushatmagatam shasarkta tadviprlutam amud adya sharanya pala raksha grihita vapusha punar avar amashta Svam nastapa paramam ata yad atma tejo Yene damani purushatma gatam sasarkta Tad vipruptam amunadya sharanya pala Raksha grihita vapusha punar anvamamshta Dvam nastapa paramamata yadatma tejo Yene dhamari purushatma gatam shasarkta Tad vipralupta manumandya sharanya pala Raksha grihita vapusha punar anvamashta Tvam nastapa paramamatma yadatma tejo
Anyone else want to try? It's a nice verse. good way to practice your Sanskrit.
Shirshai Va Uchu. The great sages said, Tham, you, na, our, tapa, austerity, paramam, ta, most, atta, instructed, yet, which, atmateja, your spiritual power, yena, by which, idam, this material world, Adi Purusha, O Supreme Original Personality of Godhead. Atmagatam, merged within yourself. Sasarkta, you created. Tat, the process of austerity and penance. Vipraluptam, stolen. Una, by that demon. Hiranyakashipu. Adya, now, Shiranyapala, O Supreme Maintainer of those who need to be sheltered. Rakshagrihita Vapusha, by your body, which you accept to give protection. Puna, again. Anvamamshta, you have approved. Translation prepared by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, all the saintly persons present offered their prayers in this way. O Lord, O Supreme Maintainer of those sheltered at your lotus feet, Original Personality of Godhead, the process of austerity and penance in which you instructed us before, is the spiritual power of your very self. It is by austerity that you create the material world which lies dormant within you. This austerity was almost stopped by the activities of this demon, but now by yourself appearing in the form of Nrsingadev, which is meant just to give us protection, and by killing this demon, you have again approved the process of austerity. Purport, the living entities wandering within the jurisdiction of the 8,400,000 species of life get the opportunity for self-realization in the human form and gradually in such other elevated forms as those of the demigods, kinnaras, and charanas, as will be described below. In the higher statuses of life, beginning from human life, the main duty is tapasya, or austerity. As Shrubdev advised his sons, tapo divyam, to rectify our material existence, austerity, tapasya, is absolutely necessary. However, when people in general come under the control of a demon or demoniac ruling power, they forget this process of tapasya and gradually also become demoniac. All the saintly persons who are generally engaged in austerity felt relieved when Hiranyakashipu was killed by the Lord in the form of Nrsingadev. They realize that the original instruction concerning human life, that it is meant for tapasya and self-realization, was reaffirmed by the Lord when he killed Hiranyakashipu. Om agyana timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshurun militamina tasmai shri gurave namah. Shri chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale. Sayam Rupak Tamayam Natati Swapadandikam Vanjagal Vatrubhishtrak Pasindu Vivacha Patitanan Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So, very nice verse. Let's read the translation again. All the saintly persons present offered their prayers in this way. O Lord, O Supreme Maintainer of those sheltered at your lotus feet, original personality of God, in the process of austerity and penance in which you instructed us before, is the spiritual power of your very self. It is by austerity that you create the material world which lies dormant within you. This austerity was almost stopped by the activities of this demon, but now by yourself appearing in the form of Nrisingadev, which is meant just to give us protection, and by killing this demon, you have again improved the process of austerity. So this is the great calamity that was being enacted in the material world under Hiranyakashipu's reign of terror. Nowadays the terrorists, you know, they may kill a few people. Hiranyakashipu had the whole universe under his grip, and he was systematically trying to remove the process of austerity. And without the process of austerity, there can be no spiritual culture. There can be no spiritual advancement. Because the senses are the primary... It's explained by the acharyas that sense gratification is the primary anartha of the conditioned souls. His primary anartha is sense gratification. So in order to curb that tendency, in order to actually rectify the tendency to try to enjoy separately... We were describing also how this false ego has two psychic divisions. The false ego is our whole obstacle. That's what we're trying to remove, destroy, the false ego. And what are those two divisions of false ego? Huh? I and mine? Yes, that's true. But basically, Prabhupada says it's the desire that I want to be the enjoyer and I want to be the controller. I want to enjoy separately from Krishna, out of illusion. And I want to try to control things. Even though I'm not ontologically able to do either of those things. That's what I'd like to do. So by austerity, one is diminishing and actually reversing that tendency. That rather than me being the enjoyer, how can I enjoy myself separately from Krishna? So I can only enjoy based on whatever I identify with. If I identify with my body, then I can really enjoy my body. If I identify with my mind, I can really try to enjoy my mind. If I identify with my intelligence or all these things, my false ego, I can really fan the false ego and think I'm something great. That's also trying to enjoy separately from Krishna. And the controlling tendency, to try to lord it over matter. These are both impossible. For the part and parcel living entities. So the process that the Lord gives for that process is austerity, tapa. He's saying this is how the world was created, this material world manifests, because the Lord instructed Lord Brahma, tapa. It's described in the process of creation that Lord Brahma was bewildered. He saw darkness all around. He didn't know what to do. And the Lord instructed to pass. So in this way, he's actually showing for all living entities, for everyone in the material universe, what is the formula, what is the program. Tapa. 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 What if that's all you heard? And you didn't hear anything else, you never saw anyone. But that's what happened to Lord Brahma. He just heard this sound. But he understood, it's described that he understood the transcendental nature of the Lord, which means that the Lord and any instruction or sound vibration is non-different. So he accepted that in his heart. And we're fortunate because we can see what's around us. We can approach devotees. We can approach gurus. You know, and we don't have to create a whole universe. We just have to try to create our day in such a way that we can... You know, get through it in a Krishna conscious way. It's a little bit easier struggle. And that austerity is helpful because, or I should say, a corollary of that is understanding the proper conception of life that is required to really get the fruit of that austerity, which is. Rejecting the material conception of life. Lord Kapila Dev explains this in the third canto to his mother Devahuti. And he's imparting this knowledge unto her to break her attachment to material existence. And so he immediately starts giving knowledge about how This material world is not a place of happiness. In other words, one has to really deeply, very deeply understand that the material world is not a place of happiness, that it's not what it's cracked up to be. This is a preliminary for really undergoing the process of bhakti yoga, because as long as there's some hope, there's some lingering desire that, well, I can just be happy here in the material world, then our resolution, our determination in Krishna consciousness is not very strong. So therefore, Kapila Dev is, I wish I had brought that book. He's instructing his mother that you have to break off this attachment. And so he's teaching her Sankhya philosophy, and he's going through actually the miseries that a materialistic person undergoes just by his very life. By accumulating, maybe we should get that. Maybe you can get that, Jordan. It's up in my room. It's in my little bag, side bag. It's right next to my chair. It's that big, and it's that big white book without a cover on it. You remember that one? So, and then he continues to describe the sojourn of the living entity through material nature. You remember that one, Dan? Sojourn of the living entity through material nature, and he enters into the womb of the mother, and it's a very traumatic experience. He's bitten by different worms. He's surrounded by blood, stool, and urine. And in that condition, he cries out to the Lord very pitiably. But as soon as he takes birth, as soon as we take birth in this material world, we forget everything because of the mode of ignorance. In ignorance, people think this world is a place of enjoyment. But someone who's objectively looking, just like you look at the life of a hog, the hog is just eating stool. From our perspective, we think this is really abominable type of existence for this living entity. So similarly for anyone in material life, from a real perspective, it's a repeated show of embarrassing affairs and failures in material life. So as they sometimes ask Jai Jagannath, why are you being so pessimistic? You're the most pessimistic monk I've ever met. Well, that's actually allowing the grounds for which the spiritual foundation of supreme optimism can be erected. Because without really seeing life in that way, then our energy keeps being dissipated, right? Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam tayaparit chetasa vivasayat mikabhuti samadho navadiyate. Those whose minds is too attached and bewildered by sense enjoyment, the resolute determination for devotional service does not take place. So this type of awareness has to be there in order to really get the fruit of all that we're doing, all the austerity, because we're doing some austerity. We're not really doing that much great austerity. You know, to be honest, as we heard, it's not like we are in the Himalayan caves. You know, there are some people who are doing some serious austerity. We got it pretty good. We get to live in a nice temple. I mean, just look at this building. If someone, anyone walks in here and says, yeah, we're practicing austerity, they're like, austerity? You got like a chandelier? Like, what kind of austerity? Yeah, just wait till you come downstairs and the prasadam comes out. Yeah, austerity. You know. You walk up here, the gourmet mahaprasad. You know, take as many as you want. Appetizers. Oh, boo, I'm just running late for the fruit and smoothie offering. I'm really sorry. I'll just catch up to you in a few minutes. So we're really not doing that much austerity. We got it pretty good here. Now let's hear this very nice description. Kindly give me one moment. Okay, this is describing the adverse fruitive activities, which is very closely linked into the process of time in the material world. Time is unstoppable, an energy of the supersoul, and acts neutrally, destroying all without bias. Time annihilates everything in the material realm. Still, a conditioned soul both laments and becomes terror-stricken when these truths penetrate his heart. After all, he has conferred on ever-shifting matter his natural soul-born longing for a tangible, secure, concrete reality. Yet this unstoppable, all-crushing force, time, is simply one of Krishna's energies. Lord Kapila further explains the ramifications of time's actions. Although time and its consequences are powerful and obvious, consciously or unconsciously, we seem to choose to remain blind to its devastating effects. This is from text 2 and 3 of the 30th chapter, the third canto. Whatever is produced by the materialist with great pain and labor for so-called happiness, the Supreme Personality, as the time factor, destroys. And for this reason, the conditioned soul laments. The misguided materialist does not know that his very body is impermanent and that the attractions of home, land, and wealth, which are in relationship to that body, are also temporary. Out of ignorance only, he thinks that everything is permanent. So naturally, once this Sambandh Gyan starts to awaken, not just theoretically, but practically, and one can perceive the futility of pursuing sense gratification, then one is more inclined, one is more eager to take up austerity and penance, because he sees that that's the means for actually liberating his soul. We want to liberate the soul. We don't want to bind the soul. The soul wants to go back to Godhead. He's crying out like anything. So we just have to help deliver the soul back to Godhead. He says, oh, okay, soul, you want to go to God? Okay, here's the process by which you can do it. You can chant. Here, let me give you some knowledge. We don't want to restrict the soul. The soul wants to go back to Godhead, and we're so in the modes of nature, we're like, no, soul, we're going to sleep. We're going to really enjoy our senses, soul. That's an atmaha, a killer of the soul. We shouldn't kill the soul. We should do whatever we can in our power to try to liberate the soul. The soul is part and parcel of Krishna, so that's service to Krishna if we do that. Kapila Muni continues to describe the imperceptible effects of time as it acts to move a human from one stage of life to the next. Souls in human bodies tend to think themselves quite perfect because they possess deep-rooted attraction for body, wife, home, children, animals, wealth, and friends. He continues, the materialistic householder burns with anxiety born of his attachment to his family and the opposite sex. He experiences the anxiety that accompanies his vain attempts to counteract misery, as well as his unending attempt to collect sufficient money. Text 9. The attached householder remains in his family life, which is full of diplomacy and politics. Always spreading miseries and controlled by acts of sense gratification, he acts just to counteract the reactions of his miseries. And if he can successfully counteract such miseries, he thinks that he is happy. And this is the general way of material existence. And then, unfortunately, he dies in great misery and great anxiety. So the idea is to liberate us from the illusions of the conceptions that are in our mind of what is real happiness. Material life, the conception of happiness that's in our intelligence means happiness means enjoying. If I can enjoy somehow or other, I'll be happy. But this is the conception of the mode of ignorance, misidentifying the soul with the body, considering the material world the field of activities for the soul. In other words, thinking that this world is the field of enjoyment. This is all under the influence of the mode of ignorance. So it's very important that we very carefully study the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam, that we can correct our vision. It's absolutely essential. Otherwise, all of our spiritual practices and all these things, they're not really giving us the full benefit. You know the story of the man in the boat? Yeah? You know that, Mitch? There's a man in a boat. And he said, I need you to the boatman. I have an extremely urgent business transaction that I have to secure tomorrow morning. I need you to get me across this river overnight, an overnight trip, and I'll pay you a huge sum of money if you can do that in a timely fashion. But Mantidia, no problem. I do this for a living. Small river, I got a good boat. Good strength, no problem. We'll leave tonight and be there in the morning. I said, great, I'll pay you when we get there. So he starts rowing, and it's dark, and whoosh, the guy's like, okay, great. This is like, I can get big money. Rower, strong, expert boatman, no problem. He starts rowing and rowing and rowing all night long. He's like, wow, man, this guy's really working. Wow, man, he's doing so much work, really striving hard. Man, Krishna's mercy. And then he keeps rowing and rowing, and then the first rays of dawn start coming up. It's like, okay, great, I'm sure we're there now. It's starting, it's morning time. Great. The boatman's there. He's like, yeah, we're almost there. Almost there, just a few more minutes. And then the sunlight comes out, and they look. He looks around. He says, wait a second. And the land is right there. They haven't moved at all. He said, what happened? What? And he's like, I don't know. I was rowing all night, you know? And I don't know. And then he looks around and he sees, and the other man sees, the anchor is still there. You forgot to take out the anchor. So all that hard work for nothing. So the anchor is this bodily consciousness, the material conception of life, looking for enjoyment in matter. That's a conception. It's in the subtle parts of our coverings, the mind, the intelligence, the false ego. So we have to really purify that. Otherwise, all of our austerity, so-called austerity, we won't get the real benefit. And so therefore, we study Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's a really beautiful. I mean, this is not just like the rare bhakti yogis or the Paramahamsas, they're into austerity. It's saying all saintly persons, all the saintly persons present. So austerity, it's a common understanding for all rishis and all great sages. They understand process of austerity and penance is the spiritual power of your very self. Even Krishna himself undergoes austerity. That's another topic. You instruct us before, and so therefore he instructs that to all humankind, as we said, through Lord Brahma. It's by austerity that you create the material world. And now by killing Lord Nrsimhadev, you again approve the process of austerity. So it's counterintuitive because we think the more I surrender and the more I sacrifice, the less I'll be happy. But it's actually the converse is true. The more we sacrifice, the more we push ourselves, the more we go outside of our comfort zone, the more we try to surrender to Krishna. And Krishna's not going to ask you to surrender more than you can. He doesn't want us to be, you know, skinny, emaciated, like just totally bogged, working 24 hours, like 23 hours, 1 hour for sleep, and we can't get any sleep that 1 hour, and we're all cracked out. He's not going to do that. He just wants you to really sacrifice and surrender for him, and he'll take care of everything. He'll make it worth your while. Don't worry. He'll take care of you. Look at the fully surrendered Saruls. You know, did Krishna really give Prabhupada a mistreatment or hard time when he was spreading the Krishna consciousness? He gave him all facility because he could handle it. Now, there's also austerity that Prabhupada went through. But for the devotee, that's not a point of difficulty, as we said, because he's not absorbed in the body. It's an opportunity for loving exchange. It's an opportunity to call out more for Krishna's mercy. I need more mercy. I need more shelter. So the devotee, he begins to like austerity. Oh, jai. Less sense gratification. Hari Bol. And we don't have to be afraid that, oh, this is not for me. Austerity. This is a bad program. That's how a materialist thinks. As we hear, all saintly persons, they're offering these prayers. So then we consider, well, what are the kinds of austerities? What type of austerities in our movement are helpful, are beneficial? And that's my question to you. What type of austerities are we talking about here?
Basically talking about Krishna conscious things, trying to utilize our speech in a progressive way, to promote Krishna consciousness within ourselves and others, rather than just trying to somehow present, you know, our false ego or justify our false ego.
Very good. Nice point.
Yeah.
Someone else?
Waking up by 4 a.m.
Wow. That's austere.
Harinam.
Harinam. Nice.
Yeah, I was essentially going to agree with about the dance point, because I was kind of meditating on this verse before. Maybe you can answer a question or elaborate on this point, because when I looked at this verse, I kind of find it hilarious that, of course, Hiranyakashipu performed a lot of austerities, of course, but for the wrong motivation.
Are you making more of like a comment? Because I want to on this one point, I want to share one more thing.
Yeah, that's fine. I could wait till
maybe
the
we'll do
so that. That's why I didn't comment before.
Yeah,
so
thanks.
Yeah, I could wait till the end.
So, yeah, the austerity really in Bhakti Yoga means to surrender the body, the mind, the soul to Krishna through the spiritual master. You receive the order of the guru, which is Krishna's instruction, and you sacrifice for that. You surrender for that. You take that up as your life and soul. Then all perfection is there. That's it. That's what we're meant to do. That's the purpose of our existence. Surrender to God. It's blissful. You think, by surrendering, I'm going to lose something. I'm going to miss out on something. No, by surrendering, you're going to gain everything and more. So surrender is the natural position of the soul, to be surrendered to Krishna's will. That's blissful. Then we feel pacified. Until we're surrendered, we're always in anxiety. Imagine how peaceful we'll be once we're just fully surrendered. You don't have to worry about all these things. So that is our challenge. Surrender our desires, fruitive ambitions, all these things. Just what does Krishna want me to do? What does Krishna want me to do in this situation, in every situation? What is the guru? What would please the guru? That's why Krishna consciousness is blissful. Jai. And no discussion of austerity would be complete without considering the primary austerity in the age of Kali. Krishna, Akrishna Tisakrishnam, Sango Pangastrabharshadam, Jagyai Sankirtana Prayer, Yajantehi Sumetisa. I may have misspoke the first line. Please forgive all the scholars. You don't really have to be a scholar to know that verse, but anyway. Intelligent men in the age of Kali worship the Supreme Lord through sacrifice. In the age of Kali, through chanting the holy names of the Lord. The congregational chanting of the holy name. That's the sacrifice. You got to sacrifice to really chant with everything you got. Every ounce. You got to put it into the kirtan. That's the yajna. That's the sacrifice. Sankirtan yajna. That's the austerity. It's austere. I got to chant this. I got to get Krishna on my tongue. I may not like it, because the tongue is jaundiced. You got to sacrifice to the going out on Harinam. And all these activities in Bhakti Yoga, they help facilitate this sacrifice, the yajna, to satisfy the yajna purush, Lord Chaitanya, who has very clearly explained he wants this chanting to be carried out in every town and village, not just mechanically. Hare Krishna. That's not what he had in mind. But very intense Sankirtan, devotees fired up, you know, just dancing in ecstasy, changing people's lives, and also chanting with the purity through surrender, through sacrifice. That's the real Sankirtan. And who would not take up, who would be so unfortunate to not take to that process? That's what the verse is saying. The sufficient intelligence. So, because we're the most fallen, Krishna has given a very merciful and easy formula. Chant, dance, And when you're tired, take prasadam. Hare Krishna. Okay. Let's take Bakuna first, and then...
Thank you, Prabhu. On this point about surrender, I like your point about, you know, the bliss comes from surrendering to the order of the spiritual master. And please correct me if I'm wrong in my understanding, but I think one of the, I guess, the criteria for accepting a spiritual master is that you've accepted within your heart that you're able to surrender to this person. And you may not necessarily be able to surrender to other personalities that are, they're qualified, but you may not be able to surrender to them. So you've chosen this person as your spiritual master because you're able to surrender to them. So for somebody who, if that's correct, if, you know, for somebody who's not yet found a spiritual master that they can surrender to, or they're not at that point yet, how do they know what authority are they supposed to surrender to? I don't know. Does that make sense?
Before one has a spiritual master?
Yeah.
How do they undergo the process of surrender?
Yeah.
Well, the nice system that Prabhupada established is that you surrender to your authority, your temple president. Prabhupada said, ready for this? I said, if you don't have a guru, you should treat your temple president like God. In other words, that's the training to actually adopt the submissive, humble service attitude that's required to progress in Krishna consciousness. Okay, I want to serve Krishna. Krishna's way up there. So how am I going to do that? Okay, here's a line of people who are in disciplic succession who are serving Krishna. So the way I please Krishna, I serve this person. Because they're already linked up. They're doing the service. They're under guidance. They're serving the parampara. They're in the disciplic succession. So this is how I enact my service propensity for Krishna. Okay, let me become the humble servant of another Vaishnav. That's what Mahaprabhu says. He says you should just become the dog of a Vaishnav. So until we have a spiritual master, then this system is generally one serves those who are already serving by coming, and that takes humility, and that can be a challenge to our false ego. And we may not agree, but at our stage, when we're just coming in, that's the best thing for us to do. It will purify us. And then in due course, if we're sincere, then by that service, gradually we'll become elevated. Then after serving so many years, and we have some standing, we have more position, we're more dutiful in our service, then we can say, Prabhu, you know, you're doing it this way, but I see it a little more like this, you know. What do you think about that? Could we try it this way? And so gradually, it's not that, you know, you just become a robot and you don't have any, you have your desire and your service desires, but, you know, if you walk in the door and expect that I'm going to tell this authority how he's doing everything wrong and he's like way off, that's not the right formula that Prabhupada wanted to establish. He said, by serving, you know, Prabhupada put so much faith and confidence in his those whom he appointed. And this is generally how he would instruct. Because it's good for us, it's good for the progressive movement of society, and that will help purify us. The idea is you have to come to the point of selfless service. Selfless means it's not about me, it's not about what I want. The more you surrender to this principle of selfless service, the more purification can come. Without really surrendering to something that you don't want to do, how are you? There's not so much purification. That's really the test of. That's really where the purification comes, when you have to do something you don't want to do. So that's one aspect of it. And you know, in due course, that relationship, guru-disciple relationship, manifests to one who is very sincerely seeking that. It doesn't come cheaply. If you want a cheap guru, you just want to get initiated, so you can get your name, you can get a three-letter last name, then, you know, it may not be the ideal situation, but rather accepting to get a said guru, that's no easy thing. That takes many, many lifetimes for Krishna to really see this person is really sincere. I really want to send my representative, my pure devotee, to this individual. Now that's something worth working for. It's something worth really doing the austerity for. and awakening that sincerity so that one can get that. Because once you get Sadhguru, it's said that one's assured of going back home, back to God. Yeah.
Acknowledging that Prabhupada said, it just seems kind of either unnatural or maybe even unfair.
Yes.
Because
it's very unnatural
for one who has accepted a guru, you know, has taken diksha. The guru was not forced on them; they chose that guru because, like I said at the beginning, they knew that they could surrender to that person. So, I guess just to make it a little bit more specific, what is that quality that the disciple sees in the guru that allows them to surrender to them? Because there's a reason why they chose that person as their guru.
I'm just considering how to answer your question. It's a nice question. Well, the basic principle is faith, that he has, by hearing from that individual, he's developed conviction. Now, as we said, that's a very rare opportunity. And even when one does have a guru, it's not generally that one will just be following around the guru 24 hours a day, doing what he says. Generally, the spiritual master instructs, you serve your authority nicely. That will please me. So again, even though he has guru, he still may be in a position where he's like, I have to serve someone that I don't have 110% faith in this person. They're asking me to do things that I don't really like to do. Because my guru asked me, I have to do that anyway. So it's not that once you accept a guru, then, okay, now I don't have to listen to anyone else, do anything else. Just me and the guru. That's not how it works either. It may be difficult. Like you said, it may be unnatural. But that's natural, that it's unnatural. Because for millions of lifetimes, we've been wanting ourselves to be the controller. It's another aspect of false ego. I want to be the controller. I want to be the Lord. I want to be in charge. So it's natural that we're naturally averse to that. But again, the purification is there, and we shouldn't worry so much. We have faith in Krishna. We have a relationship with Krishna. And Krishna will very kindly lead us back to him by the right means. If he sees that we're sincere, he'll show us the way, step by step. He'll show us how to act, where to serve, what type of service to be done. Krishna is guiding us ultimately. So when he sees that we're sincere, we don't want to look too externally at all the arrangements. Well, now I'm in this part of the country and there's not many devotees here. You know? The devotee is more trying to surrender in his heart to the Supreme Lord. He knows that Krishna will provide me. The Lord will carry what I lack and preserve what I have. The Dami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yenamamu Bhante. He'll give me the intelligence by which to come to him. So faith in Krishna will help us to push ourselves beyond our comfort zone a little bit. Those are some thoughts. Thank you. Nice question. Anything else? JB?
Hi, Paul. I was agreeing with Dance Point, and one example you gave that was really relevant to the point about the boat analogy. So from this verse, of course, Hiranyakashipu performed a lot of austerities. It's completely related to your class because although he performed many difficult austerities, I kind of find it hilarious that he couldn't perform one austerity that was by comparison far less difficult than all his other austerities. And that was respecting someone who disagreed with them. Prahlad, you know, disagreed with him. He didn't really disrespect them. Of course, he called them asura. But I found that kind of hilarious because from our practical level is that a lot of times we're performing austerities, chanting Hare Krishna, Nirjal, Ekadashi. It seems like from talking to devotees and from my own consciousness and over the years, definitely I can speak for myself, but also for other devotees who I've talked to. We would rather perform all these austerities than to apologize. One devotee said, I can't apologize to someone if I did them wrong. You know, we would rather do these. So a lot of times we don't consider respecting someone in austerity, but it appears that that's actually one of the greatest austerity. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also mentions this in his Pratishtha Parivarjana, relinquishing the desire for honor and distinction. He elaborates on this point. So my question is that based on one particular verse in Bhagavatam that's very important, I have a question after this. This is very important verse. It's in Canto 5, Chapter 12, Verse 12, and it's also mentioned in 2.3.23. It basically says it doesn't matter how many austerities you perform, neither by accepting brahmacharya, sannyas, vanapras, vows, or, you know, doing austerities in the hot sun or cold water. It doesn't matter how many austerities, one cannot understand the absolute truth through that medium. Only by taking the dust of the lotus feet of devotees can one actually understand the absolute truth. So how do we, not only that, but also by offending devotees, we, even if we get the mercy of the devotee, by offending the devotees, then we lose that mercy. So how can we understand, basically on a daily basis, to keep these points in mind that, not that we shouldn't perform austerities, but the real austerity is our, like you said, our conscience, bring up the anchor of the false ego, mm-hmm. basically. How can we keep these points in mind? Because it seems like we would rather do all these so-called difficult austerities, but something as little as apologizing or respecting mm-hmm. someone, you know, that seems like that's the real austerity. Can you elaborate on this point a little bit?
Yeah, that's a really nice point, that the real austerity also is Trinada Pisa Nietzsche. No, that's the real austerity that Mahaprabhu gave. He said this is the formula that will actually allow you to chant Hare Krishna always. Why is that such an austerity? Because it goes against every ounce of our false ego. Someone has disagreed with me. That's a really nice point, that Hiranyakashipu did all these austerities, but he couldn't tolerate, you know, being countered by his 5-year-old son. I was reflecting out some of I was just appreciating the real, like I mentioned the other class, it's really nice when you begin to like your false ego getting pinched. It's very sour, bitter medicine. Then you say, that was so nice. So I think it's also nice when that happens by karmis, you know, by materialistic people, because they don't think, this is a devotee, we have to respect him, I don't want to make Vaishnava Aparad. They just treat you like a normal person. You know, like I was in the airport, and had some rice and sabji in my bag, and they x-rayed it. And I think they thought it was a bomb or something, because it's got all these strange liquids in there. So this guy is just like, is this your bag, sir? I'm like, yeah, it's my bag. So he took me over there. He's like, all right, we're going to take a look inside. I'm like, yeah, let's take it. He's like, sir, I'm going to take a look, take a few steps up, back up. You know, he's just like really like, kind of like, it's like, I was like, it was so nice. No one will treat you like that. You know, in the temple, you know, he just treated me just like nothing. You know, and people are rude to you on the train or something. You know, and you think, oh, that's real bitter, but oh, that's nice, because you're not going to get that treatment. No one's going to just brush you to the side, like for real, like in the temple. So that is the purification. But the main thing that we have to, how do we avoid getting, you know, committing Vaishnava Aparad and getting into this? The desire for respect and everything is really another thought came to mind is this nice verse in Nectar of Instruction. Maybe you know it. Dristraistu bhava janitayur vapushchastra doshar na prakritattam iha bhakti janashpashchit gangam basam nikalubud buddha bhena pankar brahmadravattam apagachti niridharmai. That one should avoid Vaishnava Aparad by seeing that the devotee, he is the pure devotee, does not identify with his material body. So once you start to see that people are not their bodies or their minds, you know, you study the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Nature of the Enjoying Consciousness. See, the living entity is not his body, nor his mind, nor his intelligence, nor his conceptions, nor his desires. He's transcendental. So then someone rubs you the wrong way. You see, that's the influence of the mode of material nature. It's not I'm having an issue with this soul. This soul, Bhakta Jordan, is just driving me crazy. No, it's a spirit soul, and he has these different conceptions and layers. Maybe his layers are driving me crazy. No, I'm just kidding. But when you have scuffles with devotees, you see things the wrong way. It's just a combination of the modes of nature. It's changing. So why get so bent out of shape? It's a temporary thing. You don't take that. You have to see this distinction between the soul and the body, right? To get free from the modes of nature. Otherwise, you'll always be making offenses because you're under illusion. You're thinking this person is their body or they are their mind. So once you see that distinction very clearly, then you get free from fault-finding. You get free from criticizing. And all these things, which, as you're saying, they do hamper our bhakti. It's really nice. So, yeah, I recommend studying the 13th and 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita very carefully and trying to realize it to whatever degree we can. Okay, we've gone a little bit over time. I apologize. Thank you guys very much for your kind audience. I hope there maybe have been a few points that you can bring back with you and reflect after you hear any class. Just try to keep it in mind, reflect on it throughout the day, and it will deepen. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
It starts out like 40 degrees and then it gets...